break. It's a mini episode.
Hello and welcome to another mini-sode of You Gotta Check This Out with Mike and Dre. I'm the Mike, and this week we have some outtakes from last week's episode with Bill Johnston. Dre makes a plea for our Boston listeners to take Babylon 5 paperbacks to Commonwealth Books. Then he compares Lotto to a dog. Last, we all discover Melvin Summers together. I'll see you on the other side.
I do have one tangential thing related to you, Bill, before we actually have to get back to this television show. A lot of the Babylon 5 books are out of print. Any shot, any of the novelizations of some of the side stories are in Commonwealth Books.
We do not have any of them, but I will keep an eye out because you never know what will wander.
Because they are out there still somewhere, and the only place you'd find them would probably be at a place with a lot of old used books sitting around who someone didn't even know they were there in the corner.
That's probably more of an indication of the quality of your bookstore. If you're like, yeah, you know, we have other things we have to have on the show.
We're above the Babylon 5 section.
Honest,
really,
we tend to avoid the tie-in stuff.
We can put a keeper on her kid and get our final revenge, which is in one of the books, by the way. By the way, anybody out there, this is mean because Bill, you're awesome and nice, and we've just met. Any of our listeners, if you're near the Boston area, if you can please, if you have Babylon 5 books, even if you have to order them on eBay, text me and I can Venmo you for them. If you can go start selling them to just Commonwealth Books and see how long it takes for Bill to notice.
Put them in stock.
So like Delenn, right, is on a vessel whose engine is blown out and is floating in space. And if someone doesn't find her, she's going to vanish forever, and that's a big deal because she's Sheridan's main squeeze.
What was weird to me is, like, how did everybody else on that ship happen to die but her and Lanier? That's very coincidental that the only two members of that entire ship's crew are the two of them.
Let's point out, tropey-wise, as the season has gone on, and including the TV movie, Mike, that we just saw in the beginning with Ryan Bond, it is a almost red shirts... Red shirts, that would you say for Star Trek, right? Mm-hmm. It is almost a red shirts trope at this point in Babylon 5 that if there is a space battle involving a Minbari, key people are just going to die and you're not going to understand how it was just them. So like a ship will be ambushed and the most important person on that ship will die and everybody else is okay. And you're like, yeah, Duke, that happened to Dukat. That happened to a Ranger.
Was that like Dukat when he died?
But Delenn, right.
I don't know. I was watching Master and Commander last night, and I hadn't seen it in forever. And just to be on like one of those ships when those 18-pound balls randomly come through, it'd be pretty easy to just say, yeah, one of those random lasers just went through one of the random people on there and called a story beat.
I will let you know that thanks to both your editing of the script and then what I had planned to do, Mike, we were basically going to talk this weird, I was going to call it a Dragon Ball Z-ish scene of the, are we going to attack Centauri Prime some more, which is what happens next between the Narn, the Drazi, and them. But Mike, actually, I regret this a little because Londo, while they're getting bombed, goes and saves Jakar. This doesn't make a lot of sense. Jakar is in a dungeon with concrete and stuff. Londo rushes to the dungeon to save him and puts Jakar in a room with the window on a top floor of a palace. So I'm thinking, you know, we're both Midwest, right, Mike? I'm thinking tornado rules. I'm thinking you go down where it's secure, and he takes Jakar out of that spot and puts him in the palace. And that also leads me to question what the heck the Narn and Drazi are doing, because they're bombing the planet and they're attacking the prisons and not the palace.
They're non-discriminate. They will attack everybody just as equally. But no, JMS was talking about, there's a commentary that JMS did on this episode. And there's several times in the episode where he's, yeah, I stopped thinking about how they get from one place to another because he just had to get there. You'll see it at the end where Lando gives his big speech and all of a sudden is in the palace room with everybody.
Yeah, it shows. But yeah, so and you're saying it, JMS is confirming it. He picks up Jakar, puts him down, says, be right back, goes and does this really poignant scene, right? And then comes back, and it's, you know, like, even what we're doing, Mike, you know, you could have just done that after, because it's even more hilarious to think about Lonzo being like,
take the lizard man. Gotta put him in prison. Okay, put him up there. Okay, now I gotta meet the Muppet. Oh my god, the Muppet's so bad. That Muppet is smells so bad. Or right, I gotta get out of there. Oh no, the Regent's gonna give a speech. Okay, I gotta get him back in here. A speech. Oh, I hate this guy. Oh, he's gonna die? Oh yeah. Shit. Oh, that's horrible. Oh man. Oh, I gotta do what? Oh no, I gotta get the lizard guy again. See you guy again. Bye. It's like that.
I'm debating in future, Mike, making you just do one person shows of these. Okay. So our Dragon Ball Z-est moment that I'm talking about, right? You agreed to follow me as my bodyguard. You need to go. And we're seeing a lot of Old Yeller. Londo's going to do a bunch of Old Yeller to his friends. Jakar and Veer, he's like, you got to go. And he's doing the best he can because he's mind controlled and
go
can't
away
do it.
I'm going to have an alien in my spine.
No, Mike, sorry, I got a request for you. Can you do it as hairy as the Henderson? You know, get out of here, go,
get out of here, get out of here, oh, get out of here, you too. No, it always goes to Jimmy Stewart after a while. I don't know,
like,
why
I was like, what happened to Londo, Jimmy Stewart?
Oh, Washington, that's what you gotta do. There's no money here in Smallville.
The edit of this, Mike, Bill, you may just get hit the cutting room floor on the edit I send to Mike. May just be Mike's one-man show. Mike reenacts this episode. But yeah, so,
that's,
you know,
probably for the best.
Now, okay, Mike, you got a second chance if you can up your Jimmy Stewart. But we get another Old Yeller, not Old Yeller. We get another hair.
Everything leads to Jimmy Stewart. I'm done with that for today.
And then the other thing about this season, the last that's bugged me, is I don't mind in a universe where we don't explain all of the tech. Good example, Batman, the animated series, they have blimps, right? Doesn't make any sense, but okay. We now have the explanation that drone piloting is allowed in this universe. With this technology, in last season, Lanier actually did do like an autopilot on a ship. And for me, that kind of breaks it because it's going, if you never introduce that to this universe, I can just accept what you have given me with how ships work. The second you say, hey, there is technology in this universe that lets you autopilot ships, I'm like, what are we even doing anymore? So
yeah, it's like introducing another telepath problem to your story. Because like telepaths are just too powerful.
Yeah, the telepaths are over. Yeah, and this season showed that too. Don't worry about it, Bill, though. This season wrecked a lot.
You don't ever have to watch any more Babylon 5 ever. This is it. How do you feel about it, Bill? You've got through it.
So how did the roundtable about telepath and drone proliferation work for you at the end there, Bill?
The doctor's little speech, right? I don't think that was actually the analogy he was making to the Soviet nukes going missing after the Soviet Union broke up. I don't think that was true at the time the script was written. I actually looked this up today, trying to remember when, you know, because Ukraine and Belarus and Georgia returned the nukes to
Russia.
This
would have been in 1998, 1999 that the script was written.
I think it was in 96. The script was, you know, the episode aired in 98, but the actual return of the weapons was 96. So I don't know that there were any missing warheads like Franklin alluded to.
JMS has also had a particular grind with both Russia and with San Diego because of things that happened in his past. If you read his Becoming Superman book, and this scene just hits both of them. It's like hits, and then it's happened to San Diego, and then it happened to Russia just like before, and now we've got to deal with it.
It did feel very much like a weird info dump, though.
And it was referring not even to as much to what was going on with this episode. It's referring to, like, they're talking about the gods play in the garden. They've left their toys behind. Well, yeah, we know that. That was completely happened at last season. It would be nice to have something that ties a theme together, since this is like closing down the entire fifth season, that refers directly to the fifth season and not just stuff we've already completely wrapped up.
You don't need to throw some extra seeds out there.
Yep, they tried to. Hey, why not? We got this thing. It's a whole universe. We could have Babylon 5 theme parks and movies for years to come. And nope, there's only going to be one Star Trek that's going to be the flagship of this type of sci-fi. There'll be little things that come up once in a while. There'll be like The Expanse. There'll be the Battlestar Galactica. But as far as it's almost like there'll be one flagship thing to keep this type of sci-fi going. And Star Trek is the one that kind of hit the zeitgeist more than Babylon 5.
And then, I mean, the other thing, though, to note that I think we've said a couple times is I don't have any complaints that there was a studio network slot available and JMS had a group of people that had been working together for 5 years and is like, I'm going to take it even if I'm not ready. And I'll say that to anybody, especially now. It's even worse now than it was in the 90s. You get a chance to do a TV show. Even if you don't think it's ready, if someone gives you the green light, yeah, you got to take it. So It's a little painful after how amazing seasons 1 through 4 are, but I have no complaints and I have the utmost understanding, especially because, as Mike's mentioned, JMS has been one of the most open writers out there on the Lurker's Guide in the brief director's commentary. There wasn't budget to do a bunch. There's only like one or two, a DVD set. But he's been pretty open where he's, yeah, I wanted to do more, but I was budget constrained. Yeah, I wanted to do more, but there was studio interference. He worked with what he could, and we got some amazing TV, and we did get a couple of good scenes, Mike. Yeah, like, I would say, I'm going to take back what I said at the top. This episode, I think you can check out. I think if you finished seasons 1 through 4 and you enjoyed it, and you're like, I want to see the resolution of Londo and Jakar, this is the episode to check out. It does work.
Well, just skip the first 16 episodes of the season, cut right to 17.
I think you can skip 17 too, Mike. That's my 2 cents. Just go to 18.
Now, that's true. It is recapped pretty well at the beginning of this episode.
That's not Scott Summers, but...
Yeah. Havoc? Or what?
No, I was trying to think of what would be the lame Summers brother that we don't know. Melvin Summers.
Yeah. Not even up to Alex levels.
There's Scott and Alex Summers. One point they wanted Apocalypse to be the third Summers brother, but that was an aborted arc. Yes. But like Melvin Summers, who's just a dude that like can turn off sound. He's got built-in wireless headphones and that's it. And he never had to go to an orphanage or nothing.
Oh my gosh. The sonic waves are too powerful. Melvin, concert to moment.
I'm already writing this stupid plot line, though, because there's Banshee, which is a nickname I've given my son. His name is Daniel. When he screams, I call him Danshee. I'm clever. I'm already writing the storyline, Mike, where Banshee goes rogue and they're like, what do we do? And Cyclops is like, well, I know a guy. Anyway, so Bill, this is a common thing where you see me and Mike distract ourselves with better topics. During Blitzcast, we had an opportunity to talk Superman.
Thanks again for listening. Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get the show. Next week, we cover episode 19, The Wheel of Time, with Pete Johnston. Cheers, all.
I need help. Where's my wife? Right. Does the fugitive, right?
Where's my wife?
Exactly. Right. He's where's Delenn? I want to come down. And
I swear there's a one-armed man down there on your planet.
Exactly. That is. And he is. Andreas Katsoulis
is
there.
He's right the whole time.
It was the one-armed man.